Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Keisha Green, that's my lady, yo. If you can tune in, it's the way to go. Educated author with major goals. I'm becoming writer, you have the place to be. Get support, get mentored, and it's all for free. Ooh, wee, and you know where it's at. With Miss Green on the right side of the chat. I write with a purpose, so everything is worth it. An educated platform, something you can work with. Readers, yeah, come over here. Come and get the info from some of your peers. Follow open line, yeah, we got open ears. Talk what you love and express what you fear. Afraid to lose, but born to win. Hey, Miss Keisha, yeah, we're trying to go win. Come on.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to the Writer's Wife Chat. This is Keisha Green. It's another manic Monday, but besides Corona, we're going to talk to some pretty dope women tonight. This has also been super, super great the past couple of weeks, being able to talk to so many phenomenal women. I love it, love it, love it. So we're not going to stop. And tonight I'll be chatting with Alika Melson and Precious Williams. But first up, we're going to talk to Alika Melson. Alika Melson was born and raised in the Washington, D.C., Maryland area. She is currently a member of the Life Center Church in Camp Springs, Maryland, under the direction of Pastor Jay Cameron. She works for Care First Blue Cross Blue Shield as a quality assurance auditor. She is a mentor with the I Love Me Girls Mentoring Program and currently teaches, coaches the Friendly High School Flag Team, which is her alma mater. Alika is a proud mother of a daughter who just graduated from high school, and as she prepares her for the next chapter in her life in college, she is now preparing herself to take on the role of being a new author. Okay, well, see, look, I know that me and Alika are going to have a great conversation because the fact that she's talking about her daughter going off to college, because I have one in college, I have one that's going to be starting high school, so we can do that mom bonding thing, of course, but yes. The struggle is real. I want y'all to know the struggle is real for us parents. Check on us. Check on the mothers here with daughters, please. Y'all worried about all this other stuff with Corona. Check on mothers with daughters because we are not okay. We're not okay. We have some good days and some bad days, but whew, but yeah. Let me get her on the line so we can start this show. But oh my goodness. Hello, welcome to the Writer's Life Chat.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you on this fine Monday?
I am wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for that warm welcome, as I'm excited as well.
Yes. Okay. Look, I'm like, where do I want to begin? Do we want to talk about motherhood? Do we want to go straight in there?
Yes, we can, honey. Because like
in that book.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, we are not okay. The struggle is real. And I only have one. You said you have two.
Yes.
Girls,
goodness.
Girls.
Oh, yes.
Look,
yeah. Yes, they are special. That's all I'm going to say. They are special. They are moody. They're everything. I love them to death, but yeah, they work the nerves.
Yeah, yes, indeed. And mine actually graduated. I wrote that bio a little few months ago, but she actually graduated last year in 2019. So she completed her first year of college. She did community college.
Awesome.
And so she's home driving me crazy with the hormones and wanting to be out and about and not understanding that
Yes. We're
on lockdown. I mean, she comes up with
right. Something
every day. Mommy, I know a girl who does nails at her house. She says she can do my nails and I'll have on a mask and I'll have on the
oh,
I'm sorry, I don't know who else is coming to this house. So the answer is no. You tried it? No. So yeah. Yeah, that's a struggle.
Oh, my goodness. Mothers all across the world can relate to that. These daughters, yes, definitely, they try our patience. And like I was saying, I'm sure a little bit of that sprinkled into your book. It had to have, like, just for the comic relief
yes,
of
ma'am.
It all.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
So let's jump into that. Tell us about the book.
Okay, so the book is called Conquering Co-Parenting, Overcoming the Stress and Chaos That Comes with Co-Parenting. And I developed this book because pretty much from the very beginning of my daughter being born into this world, her dad and I, who divorced shortly after she was born, just never to see eye to eye. No matter how much I tried, no matter how much I tried to change, it's just he was just a very difficult person. So as the years went by, I had to learn to navigate around that because it eventually started affecting her in ways where she couldn't understand why he would make difficult decisions versus decisions that I would make. And then sometimes the older she got, he would say things to her that would hurt her unintentionally, but not him not really understanding the detriment of words that can trickle down to a young lady and how it affected her.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time she got to high school, and I started coaching the flag team and also mentoring in a girls mentor group and just being around young females her age or even younger, because I also used to be a Girl Scout troop leader, I saw so many families also struggling with co-parenting. And it's not a subject that you see that often talked about. And even when you do sometimes hear it, it's mainly talking about just the parents trying to navigate with each other and get along. But a lot of times the child gets lost in that, and you have to get the necessary help to help the child get through it as well. So for me, once I realized that she was being affected by everything, I had to end up putting her in counseling. And it changed her life, my life, everybody's life for the great, because she was really struggling. She just couldn't understand some of the feelings that were coming along with the negative things within the co-parenting relationship. And honestly, most of it was coming from her father. I live in Maryland. He lives in Virginia, in Richmond, Virginia. So we're about 100 miles apart. And although he was always present, he stuck to his court-ordered weekends, which was every other weekend. We had scheduled holidays. That was never an issue. Child support was never an issue. It was just when she was with him, he did everything he could to change anything that I had set in place for her. And it was just a very rocky unbalance for her. And then when she was, I want to say about 8 or 9, he remarried and now has two younger daughters. So that added to the equation, kind of put her in the field where she started feeling like a stepchild more so than anything, not even just to her stepmom, but to him as well. She just always felt like they got better treatment. So just the whole co-parenting thing and the need to, my goal in this book is to allow readers, mothers and fathers, because you have co-parenting issues on both sides, is to try to prevent people from going through anything remotely close to what I went through or what some of the other stories of people that I put in my book went through as well. Because it's not just about my story. It's about other people who are willing to share their stories as well. And to prevent it, and if you do find yourself in a situation with the other co-parent that just won't change, get the necessary resources and tools. Sometimes it could be putting them in activities to give them a positive outlet or finding them a mentor or, like I said, getting them into therapy. Therapy is really a great thing for all children, especially when they're going through situations like that.
No, I know that was a mouthful. I'm listening to you. No, it was good because I'm listening to you and I'm like, this book will definitely resonate with a lot, because it's just this afternoon, my 13-year-old we were at her grandmother's house, and she was saying, mm-hmm. like, her father was coming over to say hi to her. And me and her father mm-hmm. been divorced 7 years. And so she mm-hmm. goes, so I'm thinking, like, all right, I'll leave you. Your father can bring you home. And she's like, no, I want y'all to sit here, and I want y'all to talk. And, you know, ask him how he's doing. He can ask you how you're doing. You can ask him how his wife is, this, that, and the third. And I'm like, honey, listen. We ain't about to do all that.
Right.
But I will do.
Awkward.
Right. I'm like, I had to sit there and explain to her, like, listen, we don't hate each other. But we're not friends like that, you know? We're not. I'm not going
right.
to ask him about his wife. I'm sorry. I don't care what anyone says. I'm not hating. I'm just not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you want
right.
me to do here? We were married. We're divorced. We've moved on. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, bless her little 13-year-old heart. And she's like thinking, like, this is going to be cool, you know? Like, you know, we should just all sit down as a family and, you know, hang out. Who hanging out?
Mm-hmm. And it's so
That's
funny. It's so funny you mentioned that, because you said she's 13, and 13 is middle school, correct?
Yeah,
around that middle school age.
Yeah.
Yeah, and middle school was really my toughest years with my daughter. I mean, because for one, they're going through their hormonal changes. You know, that mm-hmm. transition from elementary to middle. And then getting to know new friends, new classroom requirements, where they, you know, just not, they're not in just one class. They have several classes. So they get adjusted to a whole lot of things, and those hormones take over. And that was really around the time when I had to put her in counseling, because she did not understand why Daddy was being so harsh with some of his decisions. Because I really believe in my heart, and I can't speak for him, but a lot of his issues were because he was having a hard time with her growing up and realizing that mm-hmm. she was changing into an age-appropriate young lady, and he still would see her as this little girl and would try to treat her like that, and he did not adjust to the age changes. And it affected her mm. really, really bad. So counseling was great. To this day, she still sees her counselor, because she still has a rocky relationship with him. And it's because he doesn't allow her to have a voice. It's like, I'm your parent. You don't fuss at me. You do what I say and say as I do. And that's really the strictness of his entire household. And one of the greatest things that she learned in therapy through the years was, she loves her father. She adores him, and he adores her. He loves her dearly. It's no doubt about that. He just
right.
doesn't understand that whole female path and what a young daughter really, really needs sometimes, and she
mm-hmm.
just wants to be heard. But what she learned was, he's not a bad person. He's just broken. He's broken because of unresolved
mm-hmm.
issues from him. And so through
mm-hmm.
myself and with the counselor, we had to get her to understand, this is not your fault. You know, you have to embrace him for who he is and love him for who he is, because if he changes, that's going to be on him, not because of anything you say or do.
Right.
So all of that's in.
Wow. That, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. This is so awesome, because I think that a lot of moms, you know, parents will be able to, really appreciate this, because this is real. This is going on in a lot of households, and mine. I totally
yeah.
understand exactly what you're talking about, because, you know, I couldn't say to her, because mind you, I'm sitting there and it's me, her grandmother, and her before her father arrived, but I can't say in front of the grandmother, because
right.
I was taught to, you know, respect my elders, but I can't
exactly.
really say, like, you know what, if your father would address some of the issues he had as a child with his parents, you know, then, you know, perhaps things would be a little different. So I just got to sit there and ask, I wonder why he's such a, or whatever. I'm trying to find a nice word. I wonder why he's so difficult.
Yeah,
I wonder why
he's
so
difficult.
Anti. Like, yeah, so it's like you can't really say these things, and you're looking at it like, okay, if he would get counseling, I mean, because he'll
mm-hmm.
suggest it, like, you know, she needs to go to
mm-hmm.
counseling. And I'm sitting here like, bro, you need to be there first. Like,
absolutely.
Hurt people.
Yes. And that quote is, you know, that's probably the biggest quote in my book is about that hurt people, because that's really what it's all about. And even
it's
though,
true.
When, yeah, even though our divorce had nothing to do with her, we were actually separated when she was conceived. We were good friends then, but something just shifted in him after she was born, and he no longer wanted to be married. We didn't have any grounds for divorce. It wasn't any type of infidelity or anything. We were just young. He just did not want to work on the marriage, so he filed for divorce,
right.
and I did not fight him on it at all. I let him go, and I don't know if that had a lot to do with it, because some men really want you to chase them. And
yep.
I wasn't about to do that. I moved on, and I moved back. I lived in Richmond at the time, so I moved back home to Maryland. And that's really when things got really crazy. And he never seemed to have a happy medium with me, no matter what I tried. And I really did go above and beyond to try to make things at least amicable between us when we exchanged her. But he just has a hollow heart when it comes to me, and I don't know why, and I stopped caring why. And then, like you were saying, you know, you have to watch what you say because you don't want to say this and that. Just keep staying silent, because they will see themselves. My daughter started seeing stuff before I had to say anything. And then she will come to me and come to her counselor and be like, you know what, Daddy's really not a nice person. He's being mean about this, and they discover it on their own, and then you just help them navigate through those feelings again to help them embrace them for who they are, because you can't change people.
True indeed. And I think that's super important that, you know, you do just be there to have that ear to listen. You know, it's because I think, though, with the hormones, it goes up and down, so you don't know what personality you're getting anyway. So it's like, you know, you want to take it all in. So now, you mentioned this about the book. So was that the real premise? Like, okay, I think that I can help others, or was it therapy for yourself to write this book?
It was a little bit of both. It started out being strictly a guide to help prevent others from going through it. But then as I started writing it and going through and reliving some of the memories, it became very therapeutic for me as well. But because I didn't want it to be a one-sided book with just talking about the negative impacts that I had or other people had, I also balanced it with the good story. You know, the couples that had, the co-parenting couples that had that great relationship. And I talked to a lot of fathers that I interviewed and how they viewed their children's mother in a positive manner, no matter them being together or not. And so that helps balance the book. So it was very therapeutic for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. So now, were you nervous at any point about the content on writing this book? Like, okay, do I be, should I be transparent, or should I just keep it generic? Were you afraid of judgment?
That was the most difficult part, and probably the reason why I procrastinated as much as I did, because, and I still have the opportunity to go back and edit some stuff, because the judgment is very near and dear to me, because I don't like to put, I don't like to put people's business in the street, which I'm not trying to do. But at the same time, some people who don't know me may judge me like, well, why didn't you try this, or why didn't? So yeah, the judgment was very, very difficult to get past. And it even at times would have me go back and try to say things a little differently. But then there were some things where I just could not fathom anything other than the truth about it. This is what he said. I'm not going to fabricate this. This is what he said. This is what he did. And this is how it made our daughter feel. And then I'm also was protective of her, because, again, she's 19 now. She just turned 19. But because, like I said, she still has a relationship with her father. It's just not as close as she would like it to be, but they still communicate And before the pandemic, you know, she would still see him even once the visitation order was up. When she turned 18, she would still go and visit him. So I had to make sure that this was not going to affect her in any way, because I know that once they get wind of this book, meaning him, his wife, and the whole family, there may be some backlash mm-hmm. on her part. But I was able to sit her down and talk her through it and let her know this is my story, my truth. Some of the things that okay. I'm sharing is your story and your truth. And I'm only bringing this to light to have a positive impact on other people. So nobody has to, they can choose to not go through what you went through. And that made it a little easier. But it was very hard, very, very hard.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. I know, like, you want to live a life with no regrets. Do you regret not so much the content or, you know, any of that, but do you think that, have a regret in the sense of maybe I should have did this sooner, or is it the time was now?
It's funny you ask that, because the first time I had this drop in my spirit to actually write about this was when she was actually still in elementary school, like late elementary school. And I was, at the time I was a Girl Scout leader, and I had three families that had some crazy situations with their co-parents. And it wasn't always on the daddy side. I had some mothers that were just like, are you serious? I even had to go to court for one particular couple, because when they first joined the troop, they were going through a divorce. And by the time that they were finished, their file was so thick because they detailed so much involving this one little girl. And so the father would look for ways to try to get back at this mother. And he would take her to court for the craziest things. And I went through that myself. So I was getting ready to have surgery back then. And I knew I was going to have some downtime. And God spoke to my spirit, you need to write this book on co-parenting. And after my surgery, I ended up having some complications, and the book just kind of went out the window. And a couple of years later, I started revisiting it. After I was no longer a Girl Scout troop leader and became a mentor, I started seeing girls being affected in this mentor group by parents who weren't getting along. So it kept coming to me and kept coming to me. But I honestly believe, once I decided to do it, it was the perfect time, because I hadn't finished going through some of the processes yet. I literally started writing this immediately after my daughter graduated. Not even intentionally, but the opportunity came, everything was set in place, and I knew at that point that it was God telling me, now is the time.
Okay. Wow. So now, how
I can't
do you
have
feel?
Any regrets. I feel very relieved. And even though some fear still creeps up here and there, that's going to always be, because that's of anything you do in life. And especially when you're having a positive impact on people's lives, of course, the fear is going to come in and you question yourself. You judge yourself, but the overall impact, as long as it's positive, and I have to look at it as, at the end of the day, if this is going to save just one child from having to go through a bunch of unnecessary drama because two parents can't get along, then my job is done.
Okay, wow. So what's next?
I've been toying back and forth with that, because I do believe that once the book is released, and I believe it's going to do well, but I think I need to take it to another level, because this is something that needs to be discussed in school systems. You know, I look back on times when I've gone to, like, PTA meetings, and you see one parent come in and you see the other parent, and they make it obvious that they got some tension between them. And So I wanna start just doing like some type of maybe blogs, and I'm just really kind of in the experimental stage of trying to figure out what next. But it definitely has to be a what next, because it's something that has to be ongoing in order to keep healing our communities. It's too important for it to not be within the communities.
Right.
I do plan to write a sequel to it, co-parenting through the eyes of a child,
mm-hmm.
because I've bonded with a lot of my daughter's friends and you know, some of the flag team members and just a lot of the young ladies in high school. And as I see them growing up, you know, they kind of come to me and talk to me about things that they can't always talk to their parents about, and a lot of the things that they struggle with are things that they grew up with the co-parenting things. So I want to talk to them and get them to open up so that they can share with the community. And so then younger children can be like, that's something that I aspire to not, you know, have to go through. And then they can just kind of help each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. I see, like with what you're saying, like blogs and everything, but definitely where you said speaking, definitely speaking events. I could see that, because this is something that they should, kids should be exposed to and know, you know,
yeah.
the feelings that they're
yeah.
going through. It's normal.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the only one who, you know, this is, the parents go through a divorce or a separation and what have you. You know, these are the things that they need to know, because they start to feel bad. I know, like for my daughter, my oldest daughter,
mm-hmm.
it was like she blamed herself, like, oh, it's your fault, you know, like her fault that this was happening. And it's like, no,
oh, wow.
it's not, you know,
yeah.
you know, it's not,
yeah.
it's, I, you know, but I just want my family back. I want, you know, my mom and my dad. And it's just like, okay, well, unfortunately, that's not what the reality is going to be. And so now we have to
mm-hmm.
co-parent. And I want to say
mm-hmm.
that it is very hard to co-parent when you are not dealing with two adults. Let me say that.
Yes,
it's
indeed.
Hard to co-parent.
Yes, it,
it's very hard
Amen.
To co-parent when there's only one adult there.
Yes, indeed.
And that in itself will work your nerves. And I'm going to be the first one to say it. There was plenty of times when I wanted to throw in the towel, like, listen, we
mm-hmm.
this is what we're not going to do here, okay?
Absolutely,
like,
been
like,
there.
I'm like, okay, like, I ain't signed up for this. Like, I don't sign
yes.
up for the divorce decree. We good. Like, why are you still talking?
right, exactly. And you know,
so I think
ironically,
it's a good thing for everyone.
Yes, it really is. It really is. And then I sometimes wish, like, ironically today, when I saw Wayne Brady on a talk show, and evidently he's divorced, and he's like really good friends with his ex-wife and her new husband. And they co-parent
uh-huh.
together. They still do business and stuff together. And they have this wonderful relationship. And so that's what they were on the show talking about. And that's something that I always longed for, because it makes such a difference to the child. It's so what mommy and daddy are not together anymore. There is no reason why two people who made a child should not be able to get along and coexist in a relationship in positive ways. But like you said, when you are the only adult in that relationship and the other person is acting younger than the child at times, it's really, really difficult. It's really
right.
difficult.
Yeah. Again, you need two adults. I'm just going
mm-hmm.
to go back to that. You need two adults.
Yes, Lord.
As long as you got two adults, everything will be fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But let me
yep.
ask you, how can people stay in contact with you?
I am in the process of developing my website now. My website should be up in the next, I would say, 2 months, because I'm trying to perfect it and trying to come up with the name right now. People can reach me on Facebook at Alika Melson, that's my whole name, or my email address is MelsonAlika@AOL.com. Yes, I still have AOL. People joke me all the time.
I was just about to say something, Alika. I was. I said, is she really, really doing AOL in 2020? But okay. No judgment.
Yes, ma'am. I get it all the time, all the time. But that's going
to
change
God,
once my book launches. And the crazy thing is I have Gmail, but I never use it. I never gave it out. I guess because I sometimes get a little caught up in change. And, you know, while if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's kind of been my motto.
Gotcha.
But everybody's like, no, 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 you need to fix that.
Baby steps. When we talk again,
yes,
I'm just going to ask you about the email. Did you upgrade yet? And you just say less. No, are you still operating on that America Online? So be it.
I know that's right.
But I do want to say thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
Oh my goodness.
You are so welcome. It
I had
a privilege
good time,
and honor.
I'm wishing you much, much, much continued success
thank
with
you.
The book. And you got to come back later on after the book is out and tell me what people said and what's the feedback.
We got to talk about
these speaking engagements. And most importantly,
yes,
that you done upgraded to Gmail. We're going to talk about that too.
Absolutely. That's a promise to you.
But definitely. So, yes, thank you so much. And I'm going to put
you're
you
welcome.
Back into the queue and so we can go into the next interview. But thank you so much, Alika. I appreciate this.
You're welcome. You enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Oh, my goodness. So that was funny. She said AOL. But, yes, that was Alika Melson. And you definitely got to check out that book, Parents, especially the parents that are divorced, co-parenting. Yes, I think that is a must read for sure. Next up, we have Precious Williams. So now I was like, well, who's Precious? Well, let me tell you. She's a 13-time local and national business elevator pitch campaign and former lawyer. Uh-oh, y'all better have y'all stuff together because she's about to reach us. But she's been featured on top television shows and publications while pitching and branding skills. She was featured on ABC's Shark Tank. Okay, she ain't come to play, y'all. CNN, MSNBC, Wall Street Journal, and everything else. Her philosophy of her killer pitch is evident in the strategic and personalized creative communications and presentation solutions Williams puts forth. As a serial entrepreneur, international professional speaker, and coach, Williams is equipped to bring life, strategy, and boldness to all your oral and written communication needs. That's what I'm talking about. And she is a graduate of Spelman College and Rutgers School of Law and is a current member of the Phi Beta Kappa and lives in New York. So, yes, without further ado, let us bring on Precious to the Writer's Life Chat. Welcome, Precious. How are you?
I'm great. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. Great. I am well. I'm well. There's a big old
so
smile
you
on
doing?
My face right now. I'm well.
Oh, my goodness. So what's happening? Talk to me. I mean, I know you got if you got all of this going on, you got a good pitch, then I know you got a good book. So tell me about it.
Oh, you better believe it. You know, with the Penn Legacy family, I couldn't put out trash. I couldn't put out. No. And I don't.
Okay.
I don't put out trash. But, you know, when you have Sharon Monet of Penn Legacy with her foot to your neck, it better be right. It's got to be right. I can't put out fluff because that's not what she's about. She is not about that. No. I used to be afraid to send things to her, like, I hope this is good. You know, I don't really want a problem. But the good thing about Sharon is, the great thing about the Penn Legacy family and Sharon Monet is what we've really gotten out of the process as authors. You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of people who publish books that no one buys. It doesn't make a dent anywhere. And that's just not my experience at all. Like, I've watched things just go into overdrive. I've been a professional speaker for 25 years. Yeah, the doll is only 25. I get it. Yeah, the doll is only 25. But to be a speaker for 25 years and to be a pitch master since 2011, I'm not new to this. I'm true to this. And she, you know, we were talking on the phone and she said, it's time. And I'm thinking, no book's going to change my life. I was so wrong. I was so wrong because there were so many women who were hungry for this. And the title was to excite them and get them to see, this is you. So you've been hiding behind fear, right, worry, and doubt. You're already successful, but this is what you need to take it to the next level.
Okay, so now many will ask, well, what's the next level and how do I get there?
So the next level, we have a lot of successful women of color and just women, period. But when they're ready to go into a new realm, or when they're ready to go into, or when they're going into transition, I'm a former attorney. And I have to tell you, I kept my foot in the legal field until that foot was no longer welcome there. Because I was afraid. What if going into entrepreneurship doesn't work out? You know, I could always go back to the law, but look, the people didn't like it. You know, I was an award-winning attorney. You know, and I was kicking butt in the courtroom, but spending 40 years going to court just wasn't appetizing to me. And I was 327 pounds. I was dating a very famous Hollywood actor at the time. And the way he made me feel about myself is how I wanted so many women to feel that way. And I didn't have to be thin, and I didn't have to be a stick figure, and I didn't have to – I was just me, and he liked it. And he always said the perfect fit is what got me. And I'm like, I would love for you to say I was beautiful too, but we're not going to address that issue right now. So at the end of the day, when I started my career as a killer pitch master, I didn't know how far it would take me. And I look back and I'm like, you know what, had that relationship not happened, this book would never have occurred. If I didn't win 13, if I wasn't a 13-time national champion at pitching, this book would never have occurred. Mm. Because Robert Townsend and MC Light gave me the title of the killer pitch master at the Black Enterprise Elevator Pitch Competition in Columbus, Ohio on May 16th, 2013.
Oh. Go, girl. Go, go, go. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So now with this, do you feel pressure because it's like, I got this title, like I got to live up to it. I don't want to let anyone down.
Very much so. Very much so. Very much so. Very much so. It was keeping me from, you know, doing the second book. I said, now I understand how artists feel. I now understand, because if you pop off the first time, can you match it or go higher? And that's why having someone like Sharon Monet and the Penn Legacy family, they constantly encourage me. Like, did I ever think that my book would be reviewed by Forbes magazine? No, I did not. My first with a title like this that everybody kept telling, a lot of people said the title isn't right. Right, call it the Art of the Killer Pitch. I said, no one's going to pick up that book. I wouldn't even pick up that book.
Why not?
But Bad Bitch isn't. No, because I think The Art of the Killer Pitch, I think it's cute. But my brand isn't cute. It's forward. It's in your face. It's unapologetic. And The Art of the Killer Pitch, as I said, it's cute. But when you think of a bad bitch with a power pitch, first of all, the way it flows is popping. It's just popping. And so it's going to attract a certain type of woman.
Said it, I said, ooh. You just said it, and I'm just sitting here like, okay, ow.
First of all, listen, so Sharon Monet heard it first. You know, she heard it first, and she gave me a deadline, and listen, I was scared. I was like, you know, listen, and you know what it was? I'm a speaker. I'm an international professional speaker. I did not think I could really write a book. I was like, you know, and I tried it, and it wasn't working, but when you have someone like her that guides your process, you know, because I hired her as my book coach first. And she whipped me into shape, because when the outline I had, it was so ridiculous. I'm ashamed, but I want people to know that you want to have someone who's done it before and successfully, someone who's a playwright,
right,
someone who's written, you know, that, how do you sell 10,000 books in a day? Like, who does that? That's what my coach did. My coach, I went to her Broadway play, and she's Black, and she did it, and I was there. And so I believed in her, and I trusted her. And not only did she, everything she said would happen, did, and more. And with a title like that, you know, we live in, for some of us, we're told, like, respectability politics. Like, I have to just appear professional all the time. I have to, you know, be this way and be that way. Well, that's not what she wants us to be as authors. She wants us to be authentically ourselves and to have the permission to position ourselves into our own lane. And when she gave me the permission that to write this book in my own lane now, and one book can really change your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you
definitely
can't believe it,
and
listen, fat meat is greasy. Trust me, believe it, because that's how true it is. Fat meat is greasy. I promise you that. So if you don't want to believe the truth, let me just drop it. Let me drop bombs on you real quick. And the reason why it's called Bad Bitches and Power Bitches. Yes, I love the title. I'm gonna rock with it forever. I'm gonna rock with it. Mm-hmm. It's because it's really the beginning of a movement of women who are tired of being in a box. Who are tired. Like, I'm 41 years old. I used to think being, you know, 20s and 30s was gonna be cool. Girl, when I hit 40, stop playing with me.
No,
because things became so real.
This is where it's at. Okay?
It is so where it's at. You know, and I'm not afraid of being 41. In fact, you know, this year, you know, on my 41st birthday, I was speaking at Microsoft. Then in February, mm-hmm. I spoke at LinkedIn conference. Like, who does that? December, mm-hmm. I was the pitch coach for Google. Think about that. I'm a black girl from the inner city of St. Louis, Missouri. I was always told I couldn't do it. And then you have a black woman like Sharon Monet, and me and Sharon go back to 2015 when she wrote an article on me as a June 2015 Entrepreneur of the Month for CNN. That's how long I've known her. And
wow.
Then for her to come back into my life when everybody, you know, I went to go visit, you know, those big name publishing houses, but the truth is, who's gonna rock with you? Who gonna school you on the game? And so, am I professional? Of course I am. But people know that they're getting the real me now. Before, I thought I had to be perfect, old, every hair in place. And what I realized when I came out of a very dark place is people just want the real now. I can try and pretend, like, you know, have the flat tummy and the big boot. Like, people ain't really trying to hear that. They really aren't. It's
they're
cute to
over
look at,
it.
But it's
they're
not something to be
it.
With. Over it. So when you say I'm a bad bitch with a power, when I walk into networking events, I kid you not. Whether I'm teaching, no matter where I am, I could be at LinkedIn, I could be at Microsoft, I could be at Google. They have never told me not to say the name of my book. In fact, they're like, bring the book. So, you know, when I was at LinkedIn and I gave my presentation and I got a standing ovation, I stood there because all I could think of was what Sharon Monet said. This is it. This is your time. Mm-hmm. And before I walked out the door, because I had to cry, because I was like, I'm the only one who got a standing ovation here. This is crazy to me. I'm walking out crying, and women were stealing my book from me. One woman gave me $100 for one book. That's the power of when you're creating a movement. And she saw that in me in 2015 and manifested itself in 2019. So when I tell you, you know, she probably said, like, dang, she keep bringing my name up. I'm going to keep bringing your name up because I want you to truly have all the respect in the world for me. Because you gave me the courage to name this, to really put this out there, and people are still going crazy about it. In fact, a guy named Jason last week, he bought the book, took a picture, uploaded it to Facebook, sent me the picture, and I said, I'm posting this. And I posted it because it's different from women buying it. This man had to get the book.
Right.
Later on, like Friday night, I got a message on Facebook. This woman told me that her 10-year-old son is reading my book. And I had to think about that. I said, you know what the title is? She said, mm-hmm. And? Oh, okay. You know, I just want to make sure we're clear. She said, this book is great for anyone. She said, I know you wrote it for women. She said, but my son had to read this book, and he read it. And he gets it because he wants to start a gaming company. And that is just the most beautiful thing to hear. This book has brought me more visibility than I've ever had in my life. I was training a group. I trained Microsoft
to hear
last week.
Stories
yeah.
like this.
Yeah, she did.
This is what it's about.
Because people say, oh, you know, write a book or whatever. I didn't want to write it for the joy of writing. Are you serious? I want to write it because I want it to be in the hands of every woman who fits my vibe. Every woman who fits my vibe should have this book. And the ones that don't, It's all good. Your time hasn't come yet.
Right.
But when you hit your 40s and 50s and you're not about that trying to tell people how to fit in a box, listen, as women of color, as women, period, it's time to get out of that box. I'm tired of it. I have the passion, the energy, and intensity. I'll be the firefighter and I'll go in first. I'll take the slings and the arrows. At the end of the day, it's not even about me anymore. It's about the people who come behind me. And if you see me do my thing, then you know you can do yours. And as the great Ty Goodwin said, until you step into your purpose, another woman can't step into hers. So I fully stepped into my purpose. And the only reason I am where I am is literally because of Sharon Monet and the Penn Legacy family. Every time I see them coming out with a book, I'm just like, killing the game, just killing the game. Seeing a billboard in Times Square and just going crazy. Like, oh,
right,
I can't
right.
I got what I wanted at 5 years old.
Right. No, it's I'm listening to you in the passion and conviction as you're describing all of this. And for me, oh, my goodness, me and Sharon, you figure, when I interviewed her, she had one book and she was signed to a publisher. One book,
mm-hmm.
first book. And here she is. Here she is now. And it's like I'm looking at it like, holy freaking smokes. Look at her go. And, you know, I'm someone who believes in failure is not an option. And looking at her with Penn Legacy, that's what it was. For anyone who said no, she was going to create a yes, and that's what she did. And everyone that I have spoke to who has done business with her, whatever, they have nothing but wonderful things to say about her. And, it, you know, you don't hear any of those bad stories because I've been in this literary industry for 14 years, and I've heard some
Ooh.
Horror stories about a publisher who done did wrong, mm-hmm. and sold, and did everything. So to have so many people come under her that have no horror stories, but can I just say this? When I talk to the people that are under this Penn Legacy, they're well-spoken, they're articulate, and they understand the power of their voice. This is a place for you to sell yourself because the listeners don't know, you know, so you have to sell it. And talking to you, like, you're the pitch queen, so you already know. But just her, she's just training so many others to do wonderful things. So, you know, you can't give her enough props because it is what it is, you know?
Like I said, you can't play the games with her. You can't play games. See, you can't play games with someone who's schooled in the game. That's what I'm saying. Like, you can't,
right.
like, I thought I knew some things. Like, I'm a pitch master, but I am not a publisher. I never wrote a book before. So I can't, like, all she could do was school me in the game. All she could do was school me. Because I was just like, that's not what you're going to get at big publishing houses. And you will probably be made to feel like a cog in the wheel, but I am a part of something greater. And
right.
I'm a part of something that is big and growing. And I'm so proud to be associated with the Penn Legacy family. And I think everyone should, you know, take advantage of it because there's a reason why the person who was there for you in the beginning will have your back versus the person who's the new friend. You know what I mean? New friends I've gotten
right.
because of this book. I'm like, yo, I'm cool with that. I'm cool. But I'm going to rock with her to the end. And I remember when I called her and I said,
right.
oh, Forbes magazine, Forbes has a book publishing session. They want to publish my next book. I knew I wasn't going nowhere. You got me to the mountaintop.
Go.
We're going higher. We're going to keep going higher.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. So now you mentioned that the writing the book, it wasn't the best process of things, like where, okay, writing, as a writer, it's like, oh, do I have to? But, you know, you want to get the story out. What did you learn, though, through that process?
I had to relearn a lesson from when I was in law school. You can't, when you're in college, you may be able to create brilliance in the middle of the night. When you're talking about something that's longer form, you can't write it overnight. It's a process. And you need guidance. You need someone who's been there before. And you need someone who can look over an outline. Because my problem was I didn't know how to just write. I can write pictures all day in my sleep. But to write something long form, there needs to be an outline. And when I showed her mine, she broke it down so good. She was like, okay, here's your second and third book right there. She said, you have too much in here. And she broke it down, and then I just started writing, and it was beautiful. And let me tell you something, she lit a fire in me because she told me I only had 2.5 months. Because she said somebody else was going to write this book. Oh, hell no. No, ma'am. This is my book, and I'm going hard. And she schools us like Tony Moore of Penn Legacy, the attorney for Penn Legacy, you know, you need to have yourself copyrighted. You need to have things trademarked. And I remember one day Sharon Monet was like, I see that you're trademarked. You put in for your trademark. I was like, yeah. She's like, oh, you're listening. And I was like, yeah. You know, some things may pass
yeah,
me by.
Gotcha.
But that, she said, this is your movement. This is your brand. Protect it now because there are people who are coming. And so the greatest mm-hmm. thing is you have to get with someone who's done it successfully. I don't mean people who just write a book and sell 3 copies. I mean someone who's sold and sold and sold and still schooled up on what's going on in the publishing world. She gives us tips like, hey, everybody's at home now, so people are going to start writing books, and the market can be oversaturated. That's why you need to keep your audience anticipating something. And she was right. And the truth is I was scared to write the second book. Yeah. Let's be clear. I was scared because I said, I can't do it. I can't do it. I got writer's block. And she wasn't trying to do that at all. And then being able to refreshingly tell her, I may not be scared to get on stage. I'm not afraid to be on television. I'm not afraid to be in film. The writing process for me is scary because I don't want to flop after success.
I can understand that. It is some pressure to it.
It is pressure, and I remember when my book debuted, Ty Goodwin, she hit me up and she said, your book is number one. Now, you would have thought if it's the debut of my book that I'd be looking. I wasn't. I was too afraid. And it stayed at number one, and I couldn't believe it. And I was like, I have a bestseller. And I know that, you know, but it wasn't a bestseller for an hour. It was a bestseller, and it just made me so happy because I was a bestseller in multiple categories. And how do I know that?
Right.
Because my coach and my publisher, she put me on game. She was telling me, she schooled me in the game. And so that's why I want people to know who you surround yourself with really matters, and who you are is so much more important than what you do. People may love that I'm the killer pitch master, but they also like that I'm down to earth, and they love the fact that I have been through some things.
Mm-hmm.
At 41, I have been through it. So I'm not going to give you something I ain't been through. I'm not, as my cousin, the former pimp and drug dealer used to say, I'm not new to this. I'm true to this.
Okay. No, that's definitely, I think people will gravitate towards you if you're genuine, if you're real, because we're so fed up with the gimmick. Like, we've been being force-fed the gimmick for so long that we want to embrace what is real. I said something today I asked a question today on Facebook asking ladies, when did you fall in love with yourself? Not just the outside, but the inside. And that part of is embracing your flaws and all. And sadly enough, a lot of, there were some people who it just happened for them. A lot of us, a majority of us who were answering, it happened after a breakup,
Yes.
And then the reality, the brutal reality was, wow, no one ever told me that I was beautiful. My mom didn't tell me that I was beautiful. I'm trying to sit here and think, as I'm reading this, I'm reading the people's posts and the comments, and I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, my mom never told me that I was beautiful. Growing up, I got the different compliments. Oh, you're pretty for a dark-skinned girl. You already know. I'm like, listen, okay? So now I'm embracing all of that. So people want their genuine self, and I feel like, what you're saying, I can definitely resonate for me, is because when I stop trying to fit into that mold and just be Keisha, everything else, all the doors started opening and things started happening for me. But as long as I wasn't being true to self, it was a gimmick.
It was a gimmick. Like, I remember I have a beautiful entrepreneurial friend, and we once went to dinner, like, either last year or the year before last. And she said, Precious, I could never connect with you before because you were so robotic. It was all about achievements for you. And what I was scared to tell her was because that's the only thing I had. I never thought I was pretty. I never thought that, so I had to develop a personality because if it was on looks, I would never get anywhere. And it's funny, the older I get, the more love I get, the more genuine love I get from men and from women. And they're like, oh, you're so pretty. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know how you just, when you're not used to hearing it, you're just kind of like, I don't know if I feel it. But when I put on my bad bitch and power bitch cape, I'm capping for myself. I'm capping for myself. I'm capping for my lady. I wrote a poem in here. And then I wrote a poem for Mother's Day that I sent out to some people. And I said, I don't speak for the ones who want to be perfect. I speak for those who are beautifully human.
Mm.
And I speak for those women who they may have a little extra weight on them. They may never have been told that they were beautiful, not realizing that the reason why people didn't tell them that they weren't beautiful is because people were scared to tell them.
Mm.
Or just because they didn't see it. Like, I'm from St. Louis, you know, so I grew up hearing that I'm ugly and all that kind of stuff, you know, and I look back now, and as painful as it is, the most beautiful thing came from it, because what was inside was more beautiful than the outside. And now the inside and the outside finally match. And so
there you go.
It took courage. Yeah, it took courage to be 327 pounds and get on stage and kill it. It took a lot of courage and a lot of guts when people were laughing and saying, "Oh, she's going to talk about food." And I would slaughter them on stage. And I was like, that takes rock star confidence, because everybody's going to put me out and say I'm not good enough. And so in writing this book, it was cathartic for me, because it was putting my story out there, and not as a memoir, but to share with other women that I've been through what you've been through. And so if you think it's over, baby girl, it's just begun.
Just begun. Oh, my goodness. This is awesome. Well, Precious, I want them to know how they can stay in touch with you, because you have a lot going on.
I do. So what would you like? Would you like my social media handles?
Your social media and your website.
Okay. So my website is www.perfectpitchesbyprecious.com. And that's Pitches, P-I-T-C-H-E-S, perfectpitchesbyprecious.com. And on Facebook, I am at Perfect Pitch P. On Twitter, I'm twitter.com/perfectpitchp. On Instagram, it's Instagram, www.instagram.com/perfectpitchesp. On LinkedIn, yeah, get at me and all of this, because you're going to get a lot of love. You're going to get a lot of things that's going to make you question your life. I mean, snatch your wig, get your life. On LinkedIn, I am Precious L. Williams, Killer Pitch Master. And let me just say this. When it comes to pitching, it's not a game to me. This is fun. Like, I love pitching. And when you see my little LinkedIn profile, you'll see why. You know what I mean? I've had people reach out to me today like, "I love your profile. Like, you're so in your face." I'm like, why wouldn't I be? I don't have time anymore. I'm 41 years old. I'm not here to be cute. I'm here to make a difference, and I'm here to stand out. And I want every woman who's ever felt rejected, dismissed, ignored to know you, my dears, are a prime candidate to be a bad bitch with a power pitch, because you got something to prove, not to them, but to yourself, that everything you ever thought about yourself was true. You buried it because society told you to bury it. But I'm telling you, everything you ever wanted will come to pass now, because you paid the cost now. You paid the ultimate cost of doing what everybody tells you to do. Now step into your greatness. Permission to position yourself now. And a bad bitch will take you so far in life. That power pitch will open doors you thought were closed. The people who dissed you before will be kissing you now. And you'll know the difference. Success changes everything.
Right.
And so, again, I want to thank Sharon Monet, the Penn Legacy family, my girl Kenyatta, my girl Tanisha. I want to thank my girl Toni Moore. I want to thank all of us at the Penn Legacy family. I want to thank Keisha Green. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Aleka Melson. I want to thank everybody, because I didn't get here by myself, and I won't go out of here by myself. So, bad bitches and power bitches.
You.
It can be purchased
thank
on
you,
Walmart.
Precious.
Yeah, thank you.
No, this was definitely good. Like, people, if they're just tuning in, they missed it, but they can catch the, you know, the rebroadcast of it. I'm putting it out here on Twitter now as well. But thank you, Precious, so much for taking time to sit over here at the Writer's Life Chat. You are welcome back. We can talk again.
I'll come back.
Definitely. And Sharon, girl, you are a gem. You are such a gem. But I want to thank everyone for tuning in.
You know she know.
Right. She knows.
You
can never stop telling someone something like that. So, yes, Sharon, you know you are all that in the bag of chips, girl. And Precious, keep doing what you're doing. Don't stop. But thank you all for listening. And that is it. We're out of here. Good night, everyone.
We're out of here.
We are out of here. So thank you so much for tuning in. We will be back in a couple of weeks on the Writer's Life Chat. I had a great time with Precious Williams and with Alika Nelson. Please, if you missed it, check out the archives. We have a great time on the Writer's Life Chat because it is the right spot on radio. So enjoy the rest of your week, and please be safe. Take care. Bye.